Actually, I suspect she was just looking for an excuse to go the long way. Imagine, if you would, that two new families visited our church this morning. One pulled into the lot, driving a brand new Toyota Highlander. And the family that emerges is dressed very nicely. Dad has a new pair of slacks and a clearly ironed, very nice button-down shirt. Mom is dressed just as nicely. She has a simple but elegant pair of earrings in her ears, a very nice necklace around her neck, all of which coordinates very nicely with her purse and the shoes that she's wearing. Their children, a boy and a girl, are also dressed nicely, if not quite as formally as their parents. Their hair is neatly styled and it's combed. Both of them are sporting brand new iPhones, and they're furiously texting back and forth to each other as they approach the front door of the church. Not far behind them is another family. They are also new to the church. They are also a family of four, but there are only three of them here this morning. Mom has brought her kids to church by herself because Dad's putting in an extra shift this morning. Most of their clothing looks like it's from the thrift store. It doesn't appear that it's been washed in a while. In fact, both of the children have food stains on their shirts that look suspiciously like spaghetti sauce. Mom is wearing a well-worn sweatshirt. You can't really be sure, but it looks like, if you look real closely, that maybe it once said Tony's Bar across the front. Well, both families step into the sanctuary just as the service begins. They pick up a bulletin. They begin to make their way down the center aisle, looking for a place to sit. Well, you are sitting in one of the seats closest to where they stop. Well, you look up and you recognize the man with his family because he's the new principal at the local public school. And you think, wow, look who's here this morning. Wouldn't it be great to have them as members of our church? I bet that they would fit in great here. I mean, maybe we could even get our youth group access to the new turf fields if they become members of our church. Well, as you're thinking this, the second family steps around the first family. And one of the rather shabbily dressed children brushes against you. And you notice that the child not only is rather dirty, but he smells a little funny too. Well, this mom and her two kids take a few more steps, and they stop in the center aisle as well, because they too are looking for a seat. Who will be invited to sit down first? When introductions are made and we shake hands with each other, whose names are people going to make sure they remember? Who are we going to make sure fills out a visitor card before they leave? Who is not just going to get invited, but actually encouraged to attend the potluck that we have after the service? This morning, we are going to see that Christians are not supposed to play favorites. And we're going to see why it's so important that we not show favoritism to people. Now, this temptation to treat some people better than others is certainly, especially a temptation based on how people look, is certainly not a new temptation. I mean, this is a temptation that's at least as old as the church. and probably older than that. And we know that that's the case because a first century pastor wrote to his church about this exact issue. And that pastor was James, the leader of the church in Jerusalem. And the letter that he wrote to his people is the book that we have in our Bible, James. Now, James had written this letter because many of the people in his church had been forced to leave Jerusalem because of persecution. And as these early believers rebuilt their lives in various towns and villages that they settled in, they gathered in small groups each week for times of worship and for prayer. And I'm sure that to have a visitor come to one of those gatherings was a special occasion for them. I mean, surely they must have welcomed all visitors who would come. But James was concerned that they may not be welcoming all visitors the same way. He knew the temptation. I mean, if a visitor looked like a poor man, he'd be greeted as just another body to add to the congregation. But if the visitor was a rich man, he could be seen as a great asset to that church and be welcomed as that and be treated as such. James knew that this would be a strong temptation. So let's look at what he wrote to them about this. So if you would, if you got a Bible, open up to James chapter 2. James chapter 2. And if you don't have a Bible, if you don't have a Bible app on your phone or tablet, there are Bibles in the row in front of you, the red Bibles, and you're welcome to use one of those. Chapter 2. Well, James tells his people not to play favorites with visitors based on their appearance. In verse 1 there of chapter 2, he says, "My brothers and sisters, believers in our glorious Lord Jesus Christ must not show favoritism." So James gets right to the point here. He tells his people that, Christians are not supposed to show favoritism. That's the word the NIV uses. The ESV uses the word partiality. Christians are not supposed to show partiality. The word that's being translated there literally means receiving the face. Christians are not to receive the face. And so James is telling his people, don't treat people better or worse based on how they appear to you. He then goes on to illustrate how this might play out in one of their churches. He uses the hypothetical visit of a rich man and a poor man to make his point. Verse 2, he says, "Suppose a man comes into your meeting wearing a gold ring and fine clothes, and a poor man in filthy old clothes also comes in. If you show special attention to the man wearing fine clothes and say, 'Here's a good seat for you,' but say to the poor man, 'You stand there,' or 'Sit at the floor, sit on the floor by my feet,' have you not discriminated among yourselves and become judges with evil thoughts?" So in James' illustration here, two men walk into the gathering. One is wearing jewelry, he's wearing fine clothing, and he's given special attention. He's been given the seat of honor there in the gathering place. Well, the other man who walks in is dressed in old, dirty clothes, even filthy clothes. Maybe he smells a bit. Well, he's hardly offered a handshake. He's pointed to the back where all the moms with their crying babies sit. And he's told that if there's an open seat that no one needs back there, he's welcome to use that. Otherwise, just go ahead and sit on the floor. You know, I think we can understand this type of behavior. We can sense that it's wrong, but we understand it. I mean, people make judgments based on appearance all the time. And the first impressions that we have of people are almost always based on how they look to us. The person who wears nice jewelry and fancy clothes to church is assumed to be wealthy. A person who wears dirty or filthy clothes to church is assumed to be poor. But that alone doesn't really explain why they're treated differently. You see, we have a tendency to treat people according to what we think they can do for us. The people that we think we can get the most from, we tend to treat the best. So the rich man is flattered and honored, and he's given attention, all the while the poor man is largely ignored. Well, James tells his people that showing favoritism like this, he tells them that it's foolish. He says, ignoring the poor and honoring the rich is foolish. It's foolish because it dishonors those whom God honors, and it honors those that dishonor God. Look at verse 5. Look how he says it. He says, listen, my dear brothers and sisters, has not God chosen those who are poor in the eyes of the world to be rich in faith and to inherit the kingdom he promised those who love him? But you have dishonored the poor. Is it not the rich who are exploiting you? Are they not the ones who are dragging you into court? Are they not the ones who are blaspheming the noble name of him to whom you belong? So James shows his people two glaring reasons why favoring the rich over the poor is foolish. First, James tells his people that God has shown special favor to the poor. He describes the poor as rich in faith and destined to inherit the kingdom that God has promised to those who love him. Now, this is not an idea that James came up with on his own. I mean, this is a man who is deeply familiar with the Old Testament, the writing of the prophets and the rest of the writings in the Old Testament. And throughout the Old Testament, we find God's special concern for the poor and the vulnerable, such as in Zechariah, where God is speaking. He says, this is what the Lord Almighty says, administer true justice, show mercy and compassion to one another. Do not oppress the widow or the fatherless, the foreigner or the poor. Do not plot evil against each other. But James is not just familiar with the teaching of the Old Testament. He's also intimately familiar with the teaching of Jesus. In fact, it is almost certainly the teaching of Jesus that James is quoting here in this text, in James chapter 2. If we look at Luke's account, can you advance one slide? If we look at Luke's account of the Beatitudes, we see Jesus said, blessed are you who are poor, for yours is the kingdom of God. Blessed are you who hunger now, for you will be satisfied. Blessed are you who weep now, for you will laugh. Most of the people who were part of the early church were very poor. Many of them were poor before becoming Christians. Some of them were made poor because of their decision to follow Christ and because of the suffering, the persecution that they experienced because of that. But regardless of why they were poor, many of them had a very deep, rich faith in God. Maybe it was because they had to trust God day to day to meet their most basic needs. Or maybe it was because God had chosen to give these particular people great faith. But either way, the church is always in need of people who are rich in faith. And so it is foolish to discount them. Well, the second reason that James says favoring the rich over the poor is foolish is that it is the rich who were causing them the most suffering. In the first century, which is when this was all taking place or when James wrote, wealthy landowners controlled most of the land and most of the economy in Israel. These wealthy people were known for taking advantage of their workers by forcing them to work under very harsh conditions. In fact, oftentimes they didn't even pay their workers the wages that were owed to them. The rich were also known for bribing judges. In fact, one of the ways that they were able to amass such large pieces of land that was being farmed was they were able to use the courts to gather up the land from the other individual landholders. And they did this by bribing the officers of the court. Now, obviously, these rich people knew that what they were doing was wrong, but they didn't care because it worked. And they knew they could get away from it. Now, obviously, these actions dishonor God. James tells his people that it's foolish for them to show special honor to these people who are so willing to dishonor God by flagrantly disobeying him. So James tells his people that favoring the wealthy over the poor is foolish. But the weight of James' argument against favoritism does not rest on this issue of whether it's foolish or wise. In verse 4, he tells his people that they have become judges with evil thoughts when they show favoritism. So James tells his people that showing favoritism is not just foolish, it's also evil. James says that showing favoritism violates the command to love one's neighbor as oneself. Look at verse 8. He writes to his people, he says, "If you really keep the royal law found in Scripture, love your neighbor as yourself, you are doing right. But if you show favoritism, you sin and are convicted by the law as lawbreakers." So the biggest problem with showing favoritism is that it violates the command to love your neighbor as yourself. Or to put it positively, in order for these early Christians to obey this very important command, this command to love their neighbors as themselves, they needed to love each other without receiving the face. They needed to love and to welcome each other regardless of what the other person looked like. Now, this command to love your neighbor as yourself is a very important command in the Bible. We find it first in Leviticus 19, as Ken read for us earlier this morning. Verse 18, he says, it reads, "Do not seek revenge or bear a grudge against anyone among your people, but love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord." This is a command that Jesus repeated, and that he prioritized, and that he explained. Jesus prioritized this command as one of the two great commandments. When he was asked what was the greatest commandment, he said it's to love God. But then he went on to say the second commandment is like it. It is to love your neighbor as yourself. And then he went on to say that all of the other commandments flow from those two commands. Love God, love your neighbor. But he also explained, who is our neighbor? He did this through the telling of the parable of the Good Samaritan, the point of which is that everyone, even our enemy, is our neighbor. And James takes this command and he calls it part of the royal law, since it helps to sum up everything that God expects of his people. Now, I think that James probably anticipates that some of his people that he's writing to might have been tempted to think, is this really such a big deal? I mean, I keep most of the commandments. I love my wife, I love my children, I tithe faithfully, I read my Bible regularly. Is it really a big deal if I just kind of, just kind of skip over this commandment? And James says to them, yes, it is. Because if you break this command, you are a lawbreaker. It doesn't matter what commands you do keep. If you break one of them, you are a lawbreaker. Look at verse 10. James writes, "For whoever keeps the whole law and yet stumbles at just one point is guilty of breaking all of it. For he who said, 'You shall not commit adultery,' also said, 'You shall not murder.' If you do not commit adultery, but you do commit murder, then you have become a lawbreaker." So James tells his people that even if they are keeping dozens of other commands, if they show favoritism, then they are lawbreakers. Well, James' words to his people are God's words to us. And that means that we must not receive the face. That means that we must not show favoritism. And this is not an issue that we can overlook. This is not something that we can downplay. I mean, doing a lot of other things right doesn't get us off the hook as far as this goes. Because if we fail on this, then we are lawbreakers. Let me illustrate. Imagine that you get up one morning, you go out to your car, you're headed off to work or to school or wherever, and you notice that there's been a frost the night before, and so there's frost on your windshield. And so as you get out, you very carefully scrape all the frost off the windshield so it's, you know, your whole windscreen is clear and you have an unobstructed view. You hop into your car, you very carefully put on your seatbelt. You make sure that your grandson who's sitting in the back seat is also fully belted up just as he needs to be. You carefully pull out onto the road. You're driving along the road, making sure to drive on the right-hand side of the road just as you're supposed to. As you approach the stop sign, you come to a full and complete stop just as you are supposed to. You turn on your blinker because you're going to make a left-hand turn just as you are supposed to. You make your turn, having yielded to oncoming traffic, just as you are supposed to. The posted speed limit is 45 miles an hour, and you peg your speedometer right at 44. As you travel along, you reach a zone of space where the speed limit drops down to 35, and so you too reduce your speed to exactly 35 miles an hour as you continue. Well, eventually you get to a school zone, and the flashing lights are on. But it's early enough in the morning that there aren't any children around. And so you don't slow down, and you continue through that school zone at 35 miles an hour. Now, there may not have been any children around, but there was a police officer. And he turns on his lights, and he pulls you over. And you know why he's pulled you over. And as the officer walks up to your window, you roll it down. You are ready. You are ready to list off all the vehicle and the traffic laws that you fully obeyed this morning. You cleared off your windshield. You buckled up. You made sure your passenger was buckled up as well. You turned on your headlights. You stayed on the right-hand side of the road. You obeyed the stop sign. You used your blinker. You yielded to oncoming traffic. You followed the speed limit in the 45-mile-an-hour zone. You followed the speed limit in the 35-mile-an-hour zone. You pulled over when you saw the flashing lights of the police car. You have a valid driver's license. Your registration is current, and you have proof of insurance. And so you make your argument to the officer that you should not be given a ticket because you have kept almost all of the traffic laws. And he gives you a ticket anyway. Why? Because you're a lawbreaker. Break just one traffic law, and you are a lawbreaker. Likewise, break just this one command of showing favoritism, and you are a lawbreaker. And we are all lawbreakers. But thankfully, God has fixed what we have broken. And he's done this through Jesus, who is our King and our Rescuer. This is the good news. This is the gospel. That God the Father and Jesus, his Son, have partnered together to rescue us from sin and from death and from lawbreaking. Because when we came to Jesus, we don't come to him as rich men or as rich women. dressed in clothing of righteousness, and finally decorated with good deeds. We come dressed in the tattered rags of our sin and our shame, smelling of the stench of death and corruption. Yet Jesus welcomes us without regard to our appearance. We see in this the mercy of God. And James says that we are to show mercy to others because God has shown such mercy to us. So he writes in verse 12, "Speak and act as those who are going to be judged by the law that gives freedom, because judgment without mercy will be shown to anyone who has not been merciful, because mercy triumphs over judgment." So James says that we are to speak and to act like people who will be judged by the law that gives freedom. Because of Jesus, our relationship to the law has changed. I mean, the law used to put us under judgment. But now, because of God's merciful forgiveness to us in Jesus, the law doesn't condemn us. Now it's used to show us how we can please the one who has rescued us. And since we have been shown such mercy from God, we should show mercy to others. And one way that we can do this, one way that we must do this, is by welcoming and loving all people without favoritism here at DFBS. We keep the commandment to love our neighbor as ourself when we love others regardless of what they look like, whether they are rich or poor, whether they're physically and mentally disabled, whether they're athletically fit and very attractive or a bit overweight and rather plain, whether they are white or Hispanic or whatever other ethnic group, whether they are in their 20s or in their 50s or in their 80s. Now, chances are you're going to see someone new in our church in the next few weeks. Maybe you're going to see a single mom who is struggling to corral her kids out in the parking lot. Maybe you'll see a young couple with a baby in their arms standing out in the foyer looking a bit lost because they don't know where the nursery is. Maybe you'll see an elderly gentleman struggling with the front door because of his walker. Maybe you'll see a Hispanic man who's looking for somebody friendly to sit next to. Maybe you'll see a teenager sitting in the row in front of you that you don't recognize. Each of them is an opportunity for you to love your neighbor as yourself. Each of them is an opportunity for you to obey God. Each of them is an opportunity for you to show mercy and to love impartially. Each of them is an opportunity for you to keep that great command, to love your neighbor as yourself. Let me pray. Father, thank you for your word and the way in which it speaks